Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
The following podcast is a member of the Great Big Owl family.
Smash Pod.
And welcome to Smash Pod, a podcast celebrating all the Bond films by those who enjoy, hate, or just, you know, aren't asked about them. Hosted by me, John Raine. We will be delving deeply into Bond, tackling a different film each episode with an exciting guest by my side. Now, episode 8 brings us Bondsploitation and much, much more in Live and Let Die. My special guest this week is the very funny Daily Mash writer Nick Pettigrew, who can be found on Twitter as @Nick_Pettigrew. So, without any further ado, let's keep on the tail of that jukebox.
There are two ways to disable a crocodile, you know.
I don't suppose you care to share that information with me?
Well, one way is to take a pencil and jam it in the depression hole behind his eye.
And the other?
Oh, the other's twice as simple. You just put your hand in his mouth and pull his teeth out.
Nick Pettigrew.
Good evening.
Good evening. I left a gap there because for quite a few people I've spoken over them.
Right, okay, well, we don't want that.
No, we don't. We want this to be pure radio. As it were.
I live on a main road, so I've closed the road off specifically for the occasion.
That's excellent because, you know, we don't want any sirens interrupting this gold.
No, absolutely. And gold it is, not Goldfinger.
No, we've done that. So Live and Let Die then.
Yes, I was too eager because when you mentioned the podcast and you sort of saying, you know, is anyone interested?
Yeah.
And I sort of jumped on it and went, oh, I'll do any, but obviously Live and Let Die if that's still available. And I assumed it wasn't because, you know, that's the best one.
Yeah.
And then I watched it a couple of times recently. I may have been too hasty.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's a classic. I think it's definitely a classic.
Yes,
yeah. But yeah, it's got some weird bits in it.
Yes, I think iconic, you could kind of, if you wanted to use that word, but as a film, whew.
Yeah.
That'd be my one word review. Whew.
Had a good villain, though. I think Dr. Kananga's a good villain.
Kananga is, yes. He's very measured. I like that about him. He's very sort of relaxed. Although the bit, I'm assuming it's okay to hop back and forward.
Mm-hmm.
He has the worst prosthetics I've ever seen.
Yeah, I've written down here Lenny Henry in True Identity.
Yeah, no good. So I was going more for sort of Mel B and Bo Selector. It's you're like, how has nobody noticed it's the same person?
But he does the voice, doesn't he? Names for tombstones, baby. That's how he gets away with it.
That must be exhausting for him, though, because you assume like a heroin operation is quite an involved business.
Yeah.
So to keep that up for...
He's a bit like Lee Francis, isn't he?
Well, exactly. Yeah, he stays in character the whole time.
Like if he'd be having like the Mr. Big show, Celebrity Juice with Mr. Big.
Mr. Big, now that's quite an inventive...
It's a bit rubbish, isn't it? You had all the time in the world to come up with a pseudonym. You chose Mr. Big.
No, all the time in the world is, again, it's a different film.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
Keep on track. Keep on track.
Mm.
But, he's not your typical Bond villain, I don't think. He's actually...
Well, that's what's refreshing about him, though.
Yeah, he's far more charming than Roger Moore is in this, I think.
Yeah.
I mean, apart from, you know, obviously the whole sort of the pimp slapping thing, which we don't condone at all.
No.
Because it's got that whole really weird, let's do a Bond film, but Shaft was quite successful a couple of years ago. Mm. Let's do that.
Yeah. Yeah, you get the impression that Tom Mankiewicz, who was on from the previous film, who was the writer of this one, they very much said to him, go and watch Shaft or something. Or maybe he said to them, I've just seen this film Shaft. Reckon we should, I've had a few ideas. Or maybe he didn't even tell them and they just thought he was great.
Yeah. Wow, how have you come up with this whole...
I mean, he's written this line for Roger Moore to say, and I had to write it down. Just keep on the tail of that jukebox and there's a 20 in it for you.
Oh, yeah, and then he immediately... The dialogue has never, ever been seen by a black person before it was filmed. That's quite clear. Because I think it's the same bit, isn't it, where it's the driver goes, for $20, I'll follow you to a KKK cookout.
Yeah.
And my entire body winced into my own bumhole when I heard that.
I like that bit though, because the camera lingers on him while he smiles as if it's waiting for a laugh that doesn't come.
Well, there's a great bit just after that as well, because Bond, you know, because there's a bloke trying to make the car crash and you assume he's got a gun on him because he's like a sort of a villain type.
Yeah.
But he doesn't use his gun. He uses a gun that's in a wing mirror.
Yeah.
That needs a camera, and that just seemed really convoluted.
And dangerous.
Well, yeah, you can't keep your eye on the road. I mean, I think in the highway code, they would probably say no mobile phones, no changing the stereo, no aiming a wing mirror camera gun.
Yeah, no. And that's Whisper as well. That's Mr. Big's henchman, Whisper, whose superpower is that he whispers.
Yeah, the job interview. Okay, I'm going to take you on because I can't imagine at any point in the future that that's going to be an issue.
Your champagne, sir. I just wrote he'd be shit at bingo. House.
All the 07, 77. But no, but when like that happens and the car that sort of does all that and Bond gets on the phone to Felix, isn't it? Yeah. And he puts out an APB for the whole of New York for a white pimpmobile.
Yeah.
Which is, I'm not sure that's an official make of car.
Isn't it? Wasn't it a Chrysler pimpmobile?
Oh, sure. No, you're right. It was the 71 pimpmobile, wasn't it? With the, that had all the problems with the exploding...
wing mirrors.
Wing mirrors, yes.
They might have arrested Tim Westwood.
Well, I mean, no, to be fair, I mean, this was, 1973? Tim Westwood would have been, I don't know, 42.
Yeah, 42, I reckon.
By this point, yeah. I was going to say, actually, on the age thing, because Roger Moore in this, I believe, is 46.
Is he?
Yeah,
I think he's in his 40s, I know that, yeah.
Yeah. He looks bloody good for it.
He does, doesn't he?
He's, you know, he's quite a dapper chap.
I'm 40 this year, and I look like utter shit. So, yeah, he's doing all right, definitely.
I think, I mean, style-wise, not so much. There's a really sort of unfortunate incident with sort of quite high-waisted...
denim.
Trousers, the trouser incident, where it's above belly button, which I think is...
Yeah, he's got... I've written down here, he looks like Barbie's Ken when he finally came out. Because he's got this white vest, these slacks.
Oh, the white vest, yeah, the white vest isn't good.
The matching sort of denim jacket.
Yeah.
Doesn't look good on him.
And then there's the sort of... there's the lemon dressing gown with the burgundy piping.
Yes, with the initials JB, again, showing how much of a great spy he is.
Yes.
His initials and everything.
So, you know, not only does he introduce himself everywhere, his dry cleaners know who he is as well.
Yeah. Yeah, just, if you wanted to get to Bond, just speak to his tailor or dry cleaner.
Yeah. Although, when he's wearing that, because that's quite near the start, isn't it? It was right near the start. And it's the first, the Bond girl, which is, I think, Madeline Smith, is that right?
Caruso from Italy.
Caruso, yes. And quite a good Bond girl, I think.
Yeah.
Very attractive. She was in Up Pompeii as well, wasn't she?
Up Pompeii, yes, she was.
Yes, because there's that really weird sort of Brian Ricks thing at the start where he's trying to pretend he hasn't got her in the room. She's like hiding in the wardrobe and everything.
Mm.
And I just, because I grew up, like, Madeline Smith was sort of part of my development into a man.
I see.
If you like.
I understand.
I think if I'd pulled Madeline Smith, I would be shouting it at Q as soon as he walked through the door. Sorry, M. As soon as he walked through the door. M, you will never believe who I've just slept with. It's Madeline Smith. It's incredible.
That would have been a great scene.
Yeah, if Bond just lost all of his elan and just
he was very realistic.
That to me.
I really like M being fucking livid that he's got a cappuccino machine.
How big is his coffee machine as well?
It's massive.
I thought he was running a cafe out of his flat because it's not just like a sort of a, you know, drippy coffee machine thing. He's got the bean grinder and he's got about four coffee machines in his kitchen, hasn't he?
It's like he's brought the agent back and that machine from Italy.
Do you think that's where the Italian sort of connection that she's brought? Do you think that's hers?
I reckon it is.
That would make more sense, I suppose.
Was she a magnetism, darling?
Oh, yeah, undoing a dress with a magnetic a watch as opposed to...
A watch that's only good for spoons at the beginning, because there must have been other metal things in that room that would have been attracted to the watch, surely.
Yeah. Yeah, it was actually a fortunate blocking that they weren't standing the other way around, so he was facing the kitchen. He could have got a kitchen knife through the wrist.
Or a cappuccino machine through his head.
Or a whole cappuccino machine. Yeah,
is that all it does? Yeah, but I wonder, there's a 00 agent at the beginning who gets killed. He says, I liked him. We shared the same bootmaker.
Is it bootmaker or bookmaker?
I thought it was bootmaker.
Okay.
I could be wrong.
That would make more sense, I suppose. Bootmaker, yeah.
But it made me think that you think Bond's a shit spy, but the fella who dies at the beginning, he looked about 70.
Which is, hang on, is this the one who's in the UN who...
No. This is the one who gets bitten by the snake.
Oh, right, yeah. The one that doesn't leave a mark, the snake that doesn't leave any mark on his face whatsoever.
Yeah.
Because there's three, isn't there? There's the one in the UN who dies of a loud noise, which is the kind of thing an 80-year-old would die.
It's like he's got killed by Keith Emerson. He got killed by this kind of prog.
And then there's actually the it's one of those scenes that you remember is the one where it's the New Orleans, I think, funeral.
Yeah.
And he stabs him.
Hmm.
So they set up an entire funeral with mourners and a Dixieland band and all that kind of thing. You know, it's a really elaborate setup.
Mm-hmm.
And then they just stab him.
It's the way I'd like to go, though.
Oh, no, I'm not denying it would be, because you imagine because the coffin goes down, doesn't it, and picks him up, and then they walk off with him. You imagine he's probably still alive at that point.
Yeah, and then the last thing you hear is that.
I mean, that'd be quite nice. That's quite a nice way to go. But it just seems needlessly elaborate, I think.
Well, that's the Bond thing, isn't it?
Yeah, I suppose.
But it made me think that's what the funeral, that's what it would be like. If you were having a normal funeral, right, and then someone shouted out, you know, like, Piers Morgan and Nigel Farage have died. Suddenly that would happen.
They seem really genuinely happy he's died. So I don't know whether he's done something dreadful to them.
Maybe he was a paedophile.
It is 1973. That's a strong possibility, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, everyone was then. You weren't normal if you weren't a paedophile.
Well, I was 1 year old in 1973, so I suppose technically, is it paedophilia if you're 1 year old and you're having sex with another 1 year old?
I don't know. I don't think we should go there.
I think that's probably an alleyway that we don't want to walk on.
Literally. Yes. But Jane Seymour's in this.
She is solitaire. She's again, very fetching.
And, she looks very fetching.
What I don't get is because, and I may be wrong because my memory of all the Bond films isn't sort of encyclopedic, but is it the only Bond film where people have genuine superpowers? Actual superpowers, because Solitaire can actually, the tarot cards, she can actually sort of, she's psychic, she's genuinely psychic, isn't
she? I think it is, yeah.
Yeah, and to me that seems more interesting than following around a guy in his 40s that has a JB on his dressing gown. Do you know what I mean? She's a genuine superhero.
I bet he's got BJ on his pants though.
Oh, for goodness sake.
I bet he has. So that's the only thing he'd do. Yes, but what's more interesting is that he shags the power out of her. And
he does. He fucks the psychic out of her, which is incredible. I don't know whether he has like a skeptic penis.
Arthur C. Clarke cock.
Arthur C. Clarke.
Personally, I doubt it. Yeah. He does a good turn in rapey card tricks.
Oh yes, he sex by card trick.
Brought an entire deck of cards for Jessica to do it
again. That doesn't really pan out, does it? Just like, I better keep a deck full of these cards in case this situation arises.
Mm.
But I just
have another set that just said "wank me off."
Well, yeah, just in case he's thinking, well, maybe she's not going to be entirely keen.
Yeah,
but she takes to the cock like a duck to water, though, doesn't she? Because after the first one, he's like, okay, well, we're in the middle of a heroin sort of encampment with an arch baddie. And I've shagged the psychic out of you, so we really need to get going. And she goes, well, have we got time for one more? And you're like, crikey.
Yeah, it reminded me of the first time I had chili. I had it, and then I was like, I'd really like another bit of chili. Yeah.
And, you know, there's the whole stinging bottom afterwards.
Well, yeah.
But, for goodness sake, it's going very lowbrow, this, isn't it?
God, cock like a duck's water. Oh, dear.
But I just wonder whether this is what happened to Derek Acora. Because he was hired for, like, Most Haunted for his psychic abilities. So you assume he had them at one point.
Yeah.
But clearly, like, if you watch the show, he hasn't. He's just sort of flailing around.
He's just making up as he's going along, isn't he?
Yeah. So I wonder whether between being sort of signed up and the show starting to be filmed, he had the psychic shagged out of him.
I reckon that happened. Yvette Fielding.
Oh, yeah. No, I could see that. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. We've all seen how mischievous she was on Blue Peter.
She was. She was. She was very mischievous.
Yeah. But, she probably is what made Mark Curry be so accident prone. Probably her sheer sexual magnetism caused him to crash a steam tractor into the set or knock over a giant Lego head.
That will probably, yeah. I'm going to go with that. Absolutely.
I liked it when Solitaire said, a man comes. He comes over water. I thought, well, you've certainly seen something there.
I wondered whether water was the name of another Bond girl. But actually, the other thing, I did do a little bit of Googling, and when this was filmed, I think Roger Moore was 46 and Jane Seymour was 22.
Lovely.
That's a bit creepy, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. I was going to say, it was the 70s. It was in vogue, not the band.
So if you're saying that the 70s was sort of peak paedophile, if anything, he was going a bit older.
Yeah, yeah.
For the time.
Yeah, he was probably trying to be respectable.
Yeah, well, that's fair enough.
Yeah, absolutely. I liked it when Bond was doing his chase through Harlem and literally everybody had a CB radio.
Oh, there's a CB radio in every object.
Yeah, it's like Convoy.
But I just love that you could pick up like a paving stone and there'd be a sort of a CB under it or, you know, a pineapple. You just pick it up and be able to speak into it.
Yeah.
Well, I just think as well, the thing that could have rescued Bond an awful lot in this film is if he just hired a car himself.
Yeah.
Because every time he gets into a car, there's a wrong'un driving it.
It's literally every car he gets into, yeah.
Yeah, and you just think, well, just, you know, don't be cheap. Just hire a Hertz car.
That's a very good point, because when Rosie sorts him out of that car later, that's with half a mind to double-cross him.
Yeah, yeah. So the only sort of vehicle, actually, no, there's the rusty bus, which is one of the worst Bond vehicles I think ever.
Yeah.
There's a rusty bus that he takes under a low bridge. But that's apart from that, he doesn't have much luck in vehicles at all.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's not many gadgets in this either. There's this Morse code morph hairbrush.
Oh, God, they're rubbish, the gadgets in this, aren't they? Yeah. They look like we're together in like 5 minutes. But no, sorry, no. There's the bit in the bungalow where there's the bug detector.
Mm.
And then there's the
which reminded me.
Go on.
So I was saying, do you remember Morph? Do you remember when Morph expanded and he had like a family, and his pet was like a hairbrush?
Yes.
All I could think of was that.
Oh right, did you think it was like a spin-off?
I felt like it. Yeah, I felt like Morph's pet hairbrush had kind of gone into espionage, and maybe had some sort of light up arse.
The bit in the bungalow as well, again, they try and kill him with a really slow moving snake.
Yeah, not the best, is it?
No, and he could like get a pillowcase and just put it into the pillowcase, or he could burn half the bungalow down, which is what he does.
Yes, but I quite like that he burned the snake to death and then had the presence of mind to then use the rest to just give himself a little bit of top up of aftershave.
But he only shaves half his face because he's shaving in the bath, isn't he? When the waiter turns up.
Your champagne, sir.
Your champagne, sir.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's just a weird, right, I've shaved half my face, I'll have a foot-long cigar.
It is a very foot-long cigar, isn't it?
Yeah, it's quite funny.
We should ask Monica Lewinsky about that one.
Mm. But that's when Rosie turns up, isn't it?
Yes, Mrs. Bond. With her afro wig.
Yeah, which again, I think is just sort of... Because the whole film... because as you say, it's clearly written by is it Mr. Mankiewicz?
Yes.
And the whole film seems to be, right, where would one find black people? And that seems to be the choice for the locations.
Yeah.
Because, like, the bits in Harlem in New York, New York looks dreadful in this
it
film.
It really does, doesn't it?
It looks like sort of they've filmed it just after Godzilla left.
Yeah, well, every scene looks like a sort of background of a Van Morrison album cover. Or Springsteen or something. You're just like, it's just urban decay everywhere you look. And
yeah, if you wanted gritty 80s video. But
yeah.
But yeah, no, Rosie's... I like Rosie, actually.
Yeah, I liked her too.
Yeah, I think she's pretty cool.
I couldn't work out whether she was, as an actress, good or not very good.
Okay.
She kind of flits between the two.
You think? I don't know. I think I quite liked her. I think she was sort of... She had spirit.
She definitely had spirit. I would say spunk, but...
What's that?
I was going to say spunk. I'm glad I didn't.
No. That's probably what. Yeah. But no, I think she played the I'm not very good at spying thing really well. I mean, she fooled Bond, didn't she?
Yeah, and he's not very good at spying either, so...
Yeah, so he'd know what it looks like.
Exactly.
Yeah. But there's the horrible bit where... and I know double entendres and Bond and everything. There's the bit where he says he's going to lick her into shape.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That's not nice.
No, it's not nice. And also when she says, you wouldn't kill me after what we just did. And he says, I certainly wouldn't have killed you before.
Yeah, it's like he's boasting he's not a necrophiliac.
Yeah, which again, yes. It's the 70s, makes him stand out. But before Rosie arrives, we meet Baron Samedi.
Baron Samedi is amazing.
I've put that he's basically a red coat.
Really? Well, no, yeah, no.
He's like a holiday camp performer, isn't he?
There's a stage show they have where you first see him. And it's like, I don't know if you've ever been on holiday to... I don't know, sort of Greece or Spain or something like that. And in the hotel, they say, we'll do a stage show of traditional, authentic Thingy Me Bob.
Yeah.
And you go along to it, and it's really cringeworthy because it's quite sort of, oh, okay, this is awful. Am I making sense? You know, like
where you
go to a Spanish hotel and they'll have sort of the castanets, the dancers, things.
Mm.
But this is... They're not enjoying it, and neither am I. It's that kind of thing.
Authentic culture.
Authentic inauthentic culture.
Yeah.
No, but Samedi himself is amazing. He is just the coolest.
Mm. He's Ted Bovis with palm trees.
But the little bit of research I have done, Jeffrey Holder, incredible person.
Mm.
So that he was a ballet dancer, costume designer, choreographer, director, painter, photographer. He worked with Josephine Baker. He's just the coolest guy.
He's in Annie.
Yes, he is. Yes, he's the...
Punjab.
Butler. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Did he remind you? Actually, you know, you're saying he's like Ted Bovis.
Mm.
He reminds me of Tim Curry. He has that kind of...
Yes.
That archness to him.
Flamboyantness.
Yes. Yeah. But it says that the Baron Samedi, again, referring back to my research, Baron Samedi as a mythic figure kind of thing.
Hmm.
He's noted for, a quote, disruption, obscenity, debauchery, and a fondness for tobacco and rum.
Hmm.
And you think, why do we want Bond to win?
Exactly.
Because he sounds way more fun.
He is more fun. And in fact, he doesn't die because you see him at the end of the...
Yes.
Train, laughing away because he's getting a free train ride.
That's absolutely right.
Yeah, I didn't buy a ticket. Ha 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 ha.
Yeah, it's like Southern Rail. You know, he's not stuck with all the suckers standing up. He's got room.
Although I'd like to see him do that on a train from Brighton to London. He'd freeze to death.
Well, his arms would go numb, wouldn't he?
Yeah, with all the stops.
Sat there for a good sort of 2 hours.
Yeah.
But there's the old bit with the Samedi thing where, like, they say, well, when he comes out of the grave, and they go, we better send a fake one up.
Yeah.
Because Bond's going to shoot him in the head.
But with working eyeballs as well.
So when yeah. So, you know, real attention to detail.
So Jim Henson's probably involved.
Yeah.
Hmm.
If he is involved, then he didn't do a very good job on the sort of scarecrowy things with the cameras because they are quite rubbish.
Well, more to the point, if he is involved, then he's complicit and I'm glad he's dead.
Yes.
Pushing heroin onto school kids.
See, the heroin thing, now there's another thing. Isn't heroin a bit rubbish for Bond? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You have Bond films where taking over the world, taking over Fort Knox, diamonds, and it's just, he's just dealing with a smack dealer. It's a bit...
Yeah, it's not great, isn't it? I mean, really, this should be Zamo, isn't it, rather than Bond. I want Zamo taking out the Dr. Kananga. Did you know why his name's Kananga? It's a bit of trivia for you.
I don't know.
The man who owned the crocodile farm, which is a real thing, or was a real thing in the Caribbean, was a guy called Ross Kananga, and he was mental. And they were scouring locations, and that sign that said trespassers will be eaten is a genuine sign that was on his farm.
Oh, right, so it's not set dressing. That's...
No, that was his genuine place. And he did the stunt of jumping over the crocodiles.
Wow. Oh, so the real Kananga did the actual... Oh, right. So are they real crocodiles in
They are.
Stunt?
What they did is they basically lined them up and tied them down.
Oh, dear.
And he ran over their backs wearing shoes that Roger Moore thought would be a hilarious joke, which he wears throughout the entire scene.
Oh, hang on. Don't tell me.
Go on.
Are they crocodile skin?
They are.
Oh, no.
Which is, you know, a bit cruel, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's like turning up to your friend's party in the skin of his wife, like Buffalo Bill. And when everyone's saying happy birthday, you're going, would you fuck me?
Maybe Bond should have done that in the bungalow before Rosie turns up. Would you fuck me?
To that exact song as well. I can't remember which song it was.
Goodbye Horses.
Mm.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I was on a train the other day with a lady that had Goodbye Horses tattooed across her neck.
Did she?
Yes, I thought it was a bit extreme.
It is a bit extreme because it gives you all sorts of connotations you don't exactly want.
No, no, not quite. Not
makes
quite.
You think she's probably got someone in a pit at home. Did she ask you to help her with a sofa?
Lotion on my skin, so that was something, yeah. But no, I can't shake the image of Roger Moore tucking himself behind himself in front of a mirror.
Yeah. It'd be good in his voice, though, wouldn't it? Would you fuck me? I'd fuck me.
Fuck me? I'd fuck me.
Put the lotion on the skin. It does this 3 times a day.
Well, there we go. If they ever remake Silence of the Lambs, Roger Moore.
Oh, he'll be too old now.
No, but that's why he needs the skins of younger people.
Yeah, that's true.
He can't afford the plastic surgery anymore, so this is another way of doing it.
You've got it sorted.
And he'd have the van, he'd have the gadgets to help him sort of carry it all out.
You know the speedboat chase in this? Goes on a bit, doesn't it?
Jeez, I'm so glad you said that. I went on one of those disastrous holidays of my life. It was when I was at university and went on the Norfolk Broads for a week.
Yeah.
With my then-girlfriend, her parents, and her grandmother.
Mm.
And it was worse than I've just made that sound. And that was a week.
Yeah.
And still wasn't as long as this boat chase.
It goes on. It reminded me of the OJ chase, but obviously with everything flipped.
Yeah.
Loads of black guys chasing a white guy who's, well, he's not going slowly, but it feels like he's going slowly because it just goes on and on and on.
But you have got racist cops, though.
Very racist cops, yeah.
Is it J.W. Pepper? He's a bit broad, isn't he?
He's basically like a right-wing cabaret act, isn't he? Yeah. He's like, hey, boy.
Yeah, they've dialed him up to 11 for the whole redneckiness, hasn't he?
Yeah, he's really bad.
Because I remember as a kid, because as I said earlier, I have very fond memories of this. And I remember as a kid, that was sort of, as a kid, that's the character that you look forward to because he is so sort of cartoonish.
Yes, because he's in this, then he's in Golden Gun, and he does basically the same thing in Superman 2 as well.
So was that his career? Was he just that he just needed to be a racist cop surrounded by sort of heroes?
I guess so. Makes you wonder why he wasn't in Mississippi Burning, doesn't it?
That would have been amazing.
Hmm.
Right in the middle of this very serious film, him just sort of jumping up and down on his hat and gold on it and whatnot.
Yeah, saying to Gene Hackman, "You're not gonna," just as he grabs his balls.
But there's the whole thing, because they kind of, they try and have their cake and eat it, because he is quite, as I say, quite broad.
Hmm.
But they still try and do these racial, he calls everyone boy, doesn't
yeah,
he?
Everyone, yeah.
That's a bit, it's a bit much.
It is a bit. Yeah, and his brother-in-law says it as well when the guy steals his fast speedboat. He stands up and says, "What are you looking for, boy?"
Yeah.
Yeah, you're a bit racist.
And the boats can do anything, can't they? They can go over roads, they can sort of drive across the entire lawn.
Yeah. Boy, you senseless.
Yeah, there's genuinely one bit where I thought, I've forgotten who's chasing who and why.
Yeah, it made me think, I don't need this because I've seen the opening titles to Gentle Ben. You know, when you get them seeing going across the Everglades on those hoverboat things.
Yeah.
I think that's all the boat chasing I need to see. Don't need this.
And it didn't have a bear in it.
No.
Which Gentle Ben does, so that's another advantage.
It had crocodiles. And there's a bit in this, you know, when Bond gets out away from the crocodiles after jumping over their backs, and then he douses the baddie's house in petrol. All I could think of was Partridge post Bond marathon throwing Sunny D all over his caravan. That's all I could think. I was wondering if that was a deliberate homage. I don't know, but that's all I could think of.
But I just think, as business ventures go, I think heroin farm stroke crocodile farm is asking for trouble.
It is asking for trouble. It's like that shit meme about the spider plant and the nuclear power plant.
Yeah. You're going to come a cropper at some point.
All you need is one crocodile to get addicted to heroin, and then he's in there every 5 minutes asking for more.
God, imagine how scary a crocodile on smack would be. Because there's that bit where he says, oh, they can live for up to 200 years. No, they can't.
No.
That's nonsense.
Yeah.
That's absolute rubbish.
Maybe they can on heroin.
Actually, no, yeah, that's a good point. That might sort of, I don't know, would that speed up their immune system?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know.
How would they take it as well? Because they've got very stubby arms, so I can't imagine they'd be able to inject themselves.
Well, you know that bit in Trainspotting where the Mother Superior has to get someone to inject his cock?
Oh, now there's a job you wouldn't want.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
You'd want danger money for injecting heroin into a crocodile's cock.
Yeah, I wouldn't even know where to find a crocodile's cock. Have their crocodiles got cocks?
Well, there's the Elton John song about it, isn't there?
Yes, you're right, there is. Yeah, I remember when Rock was young, which was the name of his crocodile.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Me and Jeannie had so much fun.
Yeah.
You know, it all makes sense now.
I can't believe I didn't see that before, which is probably what you said after.
Yes.
Mm. I want to talk about Mrs. Bell.
Mrs. Bell.
Yeah, she's having the flying lesson.
Yeah, oh, yes. She's the one with the massive glasses.
Massive goggle things. And Bond takes her literally, sort of takes her in a circle around an airport. And yes, the cars chase them and everything, but...
Yeah.
And then afterwards, Felix says she's in intensive care.
So what did he do after the camera?
That's what I want to know.
Did he sort of think, I better not leave any witnesses behind? Oh,
I think he did.
He gave her a punishment beating.
I think he beat her to death, or half to death.
Yeah. Because is that weird? Because that the whole thing, you know, you get the he drives around and then the wings come off and then he does his sort of one-liner. And then the next minute he's in a hotel somewhere and everything's fine and nobody's checking him anymore. Because there's a few bits through the film where he's done just enough to maybe buy himself a couple of minutes and the director or whoever's gone, oh, well, I'm sure he'll work a way out of that. That's fine.
Yeah. Because that's what was bothering me. Is he freed Solitaire from this, life of being this superhero.
Invented servitude, basically.
Servitude, yeah. And then he shagged her a few times more on the boat for good measure. And then when there was a bit of heat at the airport, he just ran off.
Yeah.
Not very nice.
I'm sure she'd be fine.
Yeah.
Right.
She's only a vulnerable young woman who doesn't know what the outside world is. I'll just leave her with these fellas who probably want to kill her.
And she's got no way, because if you think about it, she's used to knowing what the future holds.
Yeah, she's like Mystic Meg.
She is, but now she doesn't know what the future holds because, as we've mentioned, she's had the psychic shagged out.
Yeah, maybe that's why Mystic Meg's not on telly anymore. Maybe she slept with Roger Moore.
Well, you wouldn't want to go on telly after that, would you?
No. Not really.
But yeah, the whole she's in intensive care bit, did something else happen that they cut out of the film?
I think
that we're back to.
A Cape Fear style beating.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But there's the fight just before he gets in the plane.
Hmm.
It's genuinely the worst fight scenes.
There are terrible fight scenes in this.
He's so ungainly. It's like trying to fight somebody using a wardrobe.
There's a couple of moments in this where he kicks people in the stomach and they fall unconscious.
Yeah.
Which bothers me.
Unless he's got winkle pickers on, like very pointy shoes.
Hmm.
Maybe it's like a pressure point thing.
Maybe he's so good at karate.
Yeah.
That he's able to find it.
But there's a really, really awful fight choreography bit in the airport where he's sort of dealt with one bloke and there's a bloke behind him who just sort of stands there and waits for him to hit him. Do you know what I mean? It's like, oh, if this was done a bit sharper, then but I better just sort of wait for him to finish what he's doing.
Mm. But then Bond rescues Solitaire. As we discussed earlier, Baron Samedi comes up out of the ground and he faces Dr. Kananga in his underground lair.
Yeah.
And there's one of my favourite bits, that Whisper, Bond reveals that he's carrying this compressed gas pellet and Whisper's sitting on the sofa and suddenly just starts pissing himself laughing. It's like Whisper fucking loves compressed gas pellets. They're his favourite.
He's if you get gas and you compress it,
yeah,
he's happy.
Is this like hippie, what do they call it, hippie crack?
Oh, laughing gas.
Yeah, is this what Whisper's on to make it, that's why his voice is fucked.
I don't know. Maybe that's, yeah. That would make sense, actually.
Smeddy's like, Smeddy, what's his name? Kananga's just like, fuck you, Whisper, and he shoots the sofa.
Yeah.
Which, you know, fills up and expands and makes Whisper look like a bit of a dick.
See, I don't know that leather sofas are airtight necessarily.
No, I don't think they are.
No. But maybe he has a specially built one.
Probably he does. It's probably full of heroin.
Well, that seems foolish then, because you don't want to blow up a sofa full of heroin, do you?
Not really, no. No, but at that point, he doesn't care. Mad with power, Nick.
Yeah. Well, just mad, basically.
Well, just mad. But he does get the best Bond villain death in cinema history.
Oh, God, no. It's awful.
It's brilliant. It's almost as good as Baron Samedi dying by fucking a box full of snakes.
Yeah. No, although he doesn't die.
No, it's true. But he does a couple of humps and then just dies.
No, at least when Samedi falls into the coffin, he's still recognisably a human being. Whereas when Kananga's inflated and he floats up to the ceiling, he looks like a really shitty balloon that you get at the fair.
He does. It's quite funny that we're supposed to think that's a real man.
It's almost like they've made the film and gone, right, what's left in the budget? £8. Oh, shit. We just need to get an inner tube and sort of paint a face on it.
I've seen a picture of the sort of balloon puppet they used for that. And it's quite funny because it looks like Louis Armstrong just as he's blowing the trumpet.
Oh, maybe before he hits the ceiling, he could have done We've Got One Time as well.
Just as he blows up, he goes, oh, yeah.
If he floated up really, really slowly.
Oh, that would be quite beautiful. I could have played that at his funeral. Sadly, Cubby Broccoli couldn't be at the funeral, but he's sent us this video message.
Just a balloon slowly drifting. Oh, that'd be poignant, wouldn't it?
That would be absolutely gorgeous.
I'd like that. But Kananga's underground lair, again, a bit ornate for a heroin dealer.
Yeah.
Like, why do you need an underground railway?
You don't. He's effectively built himself centre parks, hasn't he?
Well, no, he's built himself a zoo because he's got crocodiles and alligators and then sharks.
Oh, yeah, he's got sharks. I forgot that.
Because that's got one of the best credits of the opening film, because in the opening credits, hang on, let me get this right. because I wrote it down because okay. I just thought, but yeah, even Jaws doesn't have this. Shark Scenes by William Grief.
William Grief?
William Grief, well, G-R-E-F-E, so Greffy.
Greffy. I like Grief better.
I'm going with Grief, yeah. So there's a specific credit, Shark Scenes by William Grief. But I'd like to be a person that you go to for shark scenes.
Hmm. I mean, how do you, does he have the sharks?
Well, this is my point. If he's got all these animals and so on, that he could probably turn a decent profit just opening, you know, as you say, with the monorail and whatnot.
Yeah.
Just make it a theme park.
Hmm. It would be like that bit in Universal where you go through the pretend train station.
Oh, I've not done that. What's that?
Oh, you go through an earthquake simulator.
Oh, okay.
It's not very good.
But you've got, you'd have Samadhi. He could sort of, you know, pop up, sort of say hello and do a bit.
Yeah, you know, a James Bond theme park would be pretty good.
Yeah, that'd work. You wouldn't want it for the kids, though, would you? Because if you wanted it to be like an immersive experience, there would be a string of sort of passionless sex with women who normally end up dead afterwards.
Yeah. No, but then we do get the train scene at the end with Teehee as his name.
Teehee.
Teehee with his claw hand arm.
Oh, is that his name? Is that Teehee?
Teehee.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, that seemed a bit tagged on.
I'm wondering if Teehee, when he goes to the toilet, if he has a joke every time and everyone's sick of it, he just says, I'm going for a TP now.
Oh, that's nice.
I bet the first time someone was like, TP, but after a while, no.
So how do you get a nickname like Teehee?
I'm guessing he laughs a lot. Maybe he's like Whisper with compressed gas canisters. Maybe Teehee just finds everything funny.
Surely Baron Samedi should be called Teehee because he laughs a lot more.
He laughs a lot more. And he's good at playing the flute and sort of busting out weird sort of dialogue that feel has no place in what they're doing.
But if it's a flute that's got, obviously, because it's this film, it's got a CB in it as well.
Yeah, everything's got a fucking CB. I bet that crocodile's cock from earlier has got a CB in it.
I'm just imagining them holding it up to their ear. Bond's just left, you know, a big 20-foot crocodile. The Bond's just left the area.
Or be like Don Jolly. Hello! Yeah! Crocodiles everywhere! It's rubbish!
Oh, imagine Dom Jolly pressed to a crocodile.
I'd quite like that, actually.
Yeah.
Because there's a high chance he'll be eaten.
Yeah. But yeah, it just the fight at the end is a bit of an odd one. And again, it's a thing that I remember from the film, and it's sort of, you know, quite memorable, but it just seems, it's that, oh, everything's fine. Oh, no, it's not. Oh, yes, it is.
Well, it pisses me off because, well, when I was a kid, I got this and Spyro Love Me confused. So they both end in pretty much the same way. With the baddie henchmen coming to them on a train and fighting them and going out of the window.
Yeah. But what I don't understand is because obviously he must know at this point that Kananga's been sort of Louis Armstronged.
Yeah.
And you know, and the whole operations. So I assume he's on a wage. You just think, well, why?
Yeah.
You'd go home, wouldn't you?
It's loyalty, though, isn't it? It's good.
Is it?
Yeah. You'd want that, wouldn't you?
Well, from my underlings.
Well, if you died and you know you didn't get the chance to say avenge me, and then they avenged you, you'd be looking down from heaven, thinking that was good. Thanks for that.
Sorry, when you say looking down from heaven, I've now again got the mental image of him floating,
carrying a harp. Thanks, Teehee.
Yeah, cheers for that, mate.
Yeah, Teehee can't play his harp, of course, because he's got a robot arm.
So, well, he'd be a bit like Django Reinhardt, wouldn't he?
He would. Or he'd have like a keytar.
Yeah, I'm just trying, what instrument could Teehee sort of manage?
Well, he couldn't do a harp because he'd break all the strings.
Yeah, but he'd be able to play it once. He'd just be able to bring, and then that'd be it, new harp.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I suppose in heaven they just hand them out, didn't they? So
That's true.
Yeah, he'd be all right.
Like guitar. He could guitar, couldn't he? He'd just hold a plectrum between his claw.
Yeah, he'd be all right with guitar, actually, yeah.
Yeah, that'd be all right.
Yeah.
Speaking of music as well, best Bond theme, clearly.
Oh, yeah, God, yeah. This is my favourite one by a million miles.
Yeah. Even it's got the really clumsy use of the word in twice.
Yeah. The grammatically, it's not sound, but musically, it's fucking brilliant.
Yeah.
George Martin's soundtrack to this, it's definitely one of my favourite Bond scores. It's definitely my favourite non-Barry score. It's so good. And I got to interview him about this, of course.
You interviewed George Martin?
I did.
Crikey.
I emailed his agent and I said, I really like this soundtrack and I'd like to know more about it. Could I interview George? Sir George, I said, I think. Mm-hmm. And I was expecting nothing. And then about 2 days later, he said, yeah, just send us the questions. And then about A week later, I got all the answers back from George Martin.
Oh, cool.
What a very nice man.
So it wasn't sort of a big train situation where he's just talking for...
No, it was very short and sweet, actually. I was hoping it would be like a big train. I'd like, well, they certainly never did drugs in front of me.
In front of me, yeah. But it is just a bit, as a film, a bit racist-y, is it?
Yeah. Yeah, it is a bit.
That's fair to say, is it?
It's just a bit, I suppose, tin-eared.
Yeah, I think, okay, that's probably more charitable,
isn't
it?
It's trying to do something, but it's kind of approaching it from a white man's angle. Really. It's kind of like your dad coming in to your room when you're listening to like hip hop wearing a backwards baseball cap going, I'm with it.
Yeah, he seems quite enthusiastic.
And doing bass, how low can you go?
Mm.
Type of thing.
But I thought, I did wonder with that with him and Rosie, because obviously that's an interracial couple. I thought, is that progressive? I don't know.
I think it is, even though unfortunately, because she's a black lady, she had to die. Which is a shame. But yeah, I thought that was pretty progressive for a Bond film, and particularly for 1970. It's 73, isn't it?
73, yeah.
Yeah, for 73, I think that's pretty good. I mean, they don't actually have any... Do they actually kiss?
Yes, in a really weird way.
Yeah,
because there's a bit when, you know, just before he boasts about not being a necrophiliac, with their lion, because basically they're going on a really dangerous mission and then they stop for a picnic in the middle.
Well, he's got some excellent pâté in the hamper.
Well, yeah, it's a shame to waste it, I suppose. Yeah, really,
absolutely. I mean...
I just remember the way they kissed, it was really sort of almost as if she didn't want to kiss 46-year-old Roger Moore.
Yeah. Yeah, that's how it looks. But I think that's definitely a progressive thing. You certainly can't accuse Bond. Actually, you can completely accuse Bond of that. Never mind. But I think overall, Live and Let Die is a very good film.
It's nonsense, but it's enjoyably so, I think.
It fulfills the Bond criteria where if it was on a bank holiday, you'd probably watch it.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
I mean, you'd sit through it all. I mean, you wouldn't just go and make a tea during the speedboat chase, obviously.
Yeah, I mean, that's if you smoke, that's your opportunity, isn't it? Actually, speaking of smoking as well, just the one of the bondiest bits in it is the hang glider sequence.
Oh, I've written that down. That's amazing, isn't it?
The fact that he's just smoking a cigar while hang gliding.
Yeah, absolutely. It's like he's sat on a lawn somewhere, just like, oh, I'll just have a cigar while I'm 1,000 feet up in the air, hang gliding. Yeah.
It's almost like he thought, well, this hang glider is about 20 foot across, so it's quite conspicuous.
Hmm.
How can I make it more conspicuous? How about the glowing end of a cigar?
And then I'll just kick a man down a cliff.
Yeah, that's just...
What a way to die.
Because the man who gets kicked off the cliff is watching the boat, has the hang glider attached to it.
Yeah.
And he doesn't notice the hang glider go past him, do a circle and come back round and kick him off the cliff.
I'd like that phone call to his family. I'm sorry, but Steve's dead. He was kicked off a cliff by a hang glider.
Just looking down the insurance policy for the job. Whether it's covers.
But at that point as well, because Roger looks a bit like the milk tray man.
Yes. Yeah.
So it could have been like, you know, you could have covered it up and said, you know, when there's a government thing, like a spaceship lands and they'll do that thing to say it as a weather balloon.
Yes.
Here they can say, well, we're doing a milk tray advert. It went wrong. Steve's dead. Sorry.
No, but I like the idea that, you know, they're very specifically worded that if he falls off a cliff, his family get a payout.
Yeah.
If he gets kicked and dies... If it's a hang glider related incident, but not if it's all three.
Yeah.
It's like a very small print on there.
Unfortunately, it hasn't met the criteria for a payout, but we're here if you need us.
Yeah.
Changes the locks.
And I like the fact that they've got quite a relaxed dress code in Connect's lair as well. It's blue denim jeans, red top.
But also, when he does get off the hang glider wearing his black suit, which makes him nearly invisible to the naked eye, he then... changes into a white suit
and a glowing cigar. Yeah.
He changes then into a white suit.
Yeah,
that's just to make it increasing the chance of him being captured.
Yeah, make it a bit sporting because it's too easy otherwise.
Oh yeah, yeah. I'm sorry, I just can't spy in this black stuff.
Mm. He could have sort of ended the film about halfway because when Kananga explains because it's a good hour before you even know what's the peril here. What's the idea?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like it's in the other, it feels like in the other Bond films, you know who the baddie is and what they're planning to do.
Yeah.
Whereas with this one, it's about an hour in before you go, oh, right, so he's going to supply heroin. Okay, well, that'll make money. And he goes, no, he's not going to supply it. He's going to give away $2 billion worth of heroin.
Yeah.
And you go, that doesn't seem a very good business plan.
Not really, no. No, it doesn't. I was thinking that when he was telling the plan, and Bond was a bit like, wow, that's really good. And I was thinking, am I missing something?
Yeah, because Bond immediately knows how much money 2 tons of heroin would cost.
Yeah.
Which I don't know whether that's due to his days injecting it into crocodiles' cocks or not.
Probably.
Yeah.
There's a lot unwritten here, isn't there?
Hmm.
But, Nick, we have reached the point where we're going to do our Smersh quickfire questions.
Crikey. Okay, let's go.
So fingers on buzzers. It's not like that.
No.
Who is the best Bond and what is the best Bond film, in your opinion?
Okay. I don't know whether... Or Bond's like Doctor Who's that you like the one that you grew up with?
I think so.
Yeah. So I wouldn't say he's the best, but my favourite would be Roger Moore, mm-hmm. I think. And for all what we've said, I would go with Live and Let Die because it has a brio to it. And it's got, I think, Baron Samedi, one of the best characters in any Bond film. So I will go Roger Moore, Live and Let Die.
Excellent. So in your opinion, who is the worst Bond and what is the worst Bond film?
Worst Bond would be... I think Dalton. I think he's. I know, but he's not much fun. And I think what the problem was with Dalton was it was a serious person in a silly set of films. They were still quite silly,
mm-hmm.
possibly. Whereas if you'd put Dalton in the recent ones, the reboot stuff, it might have worked better. I don't know, but Dalton never really sort of took my fancy.
And what's the worst Bond film, in your opinion?
The worst Bond film is View to a Kill, easily.
Because
it's got Duran Duran in it, and Duran Duran makes everything awful.
Okay, great. So next, Bond is full of stupid names like Money Penny, Small Bone, Good Head. I do say Small Bone because someone picked me up because I had Small Bush, but that's a different matter.
Yeah. Ridiculous. No, don't be.
Sorry. So off the top of your head, if you can, give me your best Bond lady name.
I don't know. Tina Rach.
Tina Rach.
Yeah.
Good. We'll move on. So if you can, give me the best Bond film title that you've just made up.
Punching Russia.
Punching Russia is excellent. Thank you. So a hypothetical fist fight takes place between Simon Templar, the Saint, and James Bond 007. Who wins?
James Bond. He would kick Simon Templar's stupid face in.
Okay. Finally, you're stranded on an island with Connery, Lazenby, Moore, Dalton, Brosnan and Craig. Who do you elect as leader to devise your rescue attempt? And if that fails, who do you eat first?
I would go Dalton again. He seems, again, he'd be very serious-minded. He'd really want to get on with it, I think. You know, you think with sort of Connery and Moore, they're sort of a bit lazy by now. I think Dalton would really sort of get a handle on it. Mm. So I'd definitely go for him for the plan.
Yeah.
Eating-wise, I think Connery and Moore would be a bit gamey by now.
Yeah.
And is it a desert island, did you say?
It just says island. So let's say desert island.
The only reason I ask is because if fuel is quite scarce,
yeah,
you wouldn't want to cook Connery or Moore because you'd need to slow cook them because it'd be quite tough.
Yeah.
And that'd take up a lot of fuel. But yeah. I think Daniel Craig has got a lot of meat on him. Mm. He's still quite buff, isn't he?
Mm.
So I suppose he'd have a lot of eating on him, although not a lot of fat, which is what you'd need for energy. So I'd take Daniel Craig only if he was between Bond films and he'd put a bit of fat on.
Well, I did see him at the football the weekend just gone. He did look a bit like he was carrying timber, as John Gregory would say.
Oh, lovely. Delicious. Okay. We'll go with Craig then.
All right. Well, Nick Pettigrew, it's been an absolute pleasure to have you this week.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much for letting me do this.
No, thank you very much. And I shall say to you goodbye.
Goodbye.
GreatBigOwl.com. Hey, marketers. Want a matchmaker to set you up with your perfect audience? Well, look no further. Get intimate right away with host-read sponsorships with Acast. Use Acast's self-serve ad platform to search and partner up with a podcaster or two from our network of more than 100,000 shows. Have them sing your praises in their own words. And get their listeners ready to be wooed into loyal customers. It's the ultimate loving endorsement. Book host-read sponsorships with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.